difference a week makes.
Just a week ago, we were playing with puppies, and it was sunny, and it was nice. And now it's snowy, the temperature's hovering around zero, but that's the way it goes. For the players, they got to go enjoy the nice brand new indoor facility, complete with a full turf field, which is great timing, I guess, all things considered. Not just the weather, but with the game against St. Louis coming up inside the dome. Playing on turf, getting used to that, makes for nice preparation, getting ready to play on their turf field. Thank you for joining me on the DenverBroncos.com podcast. I'm Ben Swanson, the associate editor of the website. We've got another great episode for you. As always, our columnist Andrew Mason is here with me, and I'm joined by Warren Giudice, our correspondent, to talk about the AFC West. But before we get into all that, let's start with our NFL roundup of what's going on around the league. The biggest news had to be from Sunday. Unfortunate news, I have to say, sad news, that Carson Palmer tore his ACL in a game against the Rams. In the fourth quarter, they were trying to mount a comeback, and they did, but unfortunately Palmer left the game with that knee injury. Drew Stanton led the charge with a comeback win, 31-14. A one-loss team, they've really positioned themselves atop the league looking towards the postseason, and sadly, they won't be able to do that with their starting quarterback. Head coach Bruce Arians said he's confident, though, in Drew Stanton, their backup. His exact quote was, "We can win the Super Bowl with Drew Stanton. There is no doubt in my mind." We'll have to wait and see whether that's true or not. You obviously don't want to go into that situation with your backup, but there's probably not many better coaches than Bruce Arians if you want to get a quarterback ready, so at least they have that. The Broncos were the only team to beat the Cardinals so far this season, but Stanton was knocked out of that game, and they had to go with their backup quarterback, Logan Thomas, a rookie. If they have to go back to him, Arians might not be as confident going into the postseason with a rookie quarterback. So hopefully they won't have to face that. In other news, San Francisco won in overtime against the New Orleans Saints, which had to be a must-win game for them. They're a game back from Seattle and Green Bay in the wild card chase. Green Bay and Seattle are tied at 6-3, but Seattle holds the tiebreaker there. You know, the Packers had a huge win over the Bears on Sunday Night Football, and Chicago looks to be in a bit of a free fall there. Things are just not going very well in the Windy City right now. Looking to the AFC playoff race, Cleveland took control of the AFC North with a win over Cincinnati on Thursday night. I wouldn't think I'd be saying this season, but what a time it must be to be a sports fan in Cleveland. LeBron James back in town. Things aren't going so hot for the Cavs, but with all the changes in their roster, things could easily get better as they start to mesh. And on the football side, you know, they're ahead of a very tough division. There's not a whole lot of breathing room. The Bengals are still right there in the wild card spot, along with the Kansas City Chiefs. Going back to the North, though, that division is such a mess. And I mean that in the best way possible, not like the NFC South. In the AFC North, Pittsburgh and the Ravens are still right behind them in that race. Two very good teams are going to be left out there. All four of them have a winning record right now, so it's going to be a tough divisional battle going to the end of the season. In Broncos news, we have some sad big news that just broke today on Thursday. Linebacker Nate Irving has been moved to the IR, which will end his season, with that spot opening up on the active roster. The Broncos claimed Todd Davis, a linebacker who was most recently with the Saints, off of the waiver list, and Ronnie Hillman has a foot sprain, has not practiced so far this week. All we have at the time of recording this podcast are Wednesday and Thursday, so maybe he comes back on Friday, I can't say at this point. But you also have Monte Ball, who has come back to practice last week, and he's been in full participation each of the practices this week. Could be aiming for a comeback in his hometown of St. Louis. We'll just have to wait and see if he gets that time. Offensive coordinator Adam Gase has said that they're just going to go with a hot hand at running back.
We're going to play the hot hand. I mean, right now, CJ, he had the best game last week. He's been kind of flashing since last year. I mean, if you recall when we played San Francisco in the preseason, I mean, everybody was really high. He gets hurt. He's out for a while. Kind of gets lost in the shuffle. We stuck him in there a little bit. He's kind of always been... He's shown up, and then something would happen where he kind of got moved out of that spot, but he's never wavered as far as his preparation, the way he practices. He just kept doing his thing, and I think he was just waiting for his opportunity. He got one last week, made the most of it, and you know, now we'll see. Every game is going to be different. I mean, right now I'm feeling like, hey, whoever's got the hot hand is going to get the ball. So whoever starts off good, we'll keep them in there and just let them keep carrying it.
And for the offensive line, there have been some bumps and bruises, but nothing significant. A few changes here and there as they try and find the five that they want up front consistently at the end of the season. And with that, let's move on and look at how they did against the Raiders this past week on Sunday in Oakland.
It was a slow start for the Broncos. A couple early turnovers really gave the Raiders some opportunities to score, and they succeeded both times they got those chances. But after that, their offense couldn't move the ball whatsoever. The Broncos defense dug in and held the Raiders to pretty much bupkis.
Really, in terms of first downs, it was bupkis. No rushing first downs for the Raiders. The first time the Broncos have done that since 1997 against Carolina. So pretty remarkable feat for the run defense.
Yeah, I mean, the Raiders didn't even cross 100 total yards until late in the third quarter. And then they almost doubled that on the last drive of the game. It was business as usual for pretty much the second and third quarter for Denver. Five straight touchdowns. You know, once again, another running back stepped up. C.J. Anderson this time was the one who took the load after Ronnie Hillman had a foot sprain. And aside from that touchdown at the end of the game, Oakland didn't do anything.
I was disappointed myself because a couple of times during the game I tweeted this stat about how C.J. Anderson was outgaining the entire Raiders offense. And if it was not for that 8-play, 97-yard drive at the end of the game, that would have been the case because CJ had it finished with a, you know, with 107 or 163 yards from scrimmage on the day. So that last drive kind of threw out a lot of what would have been some really cool stats, elite stats for the defense. All that would have been missing was the shutout. But you know, again, the 10 points the Raiders had were on short field set up by turnovers, which was continuing the theme from the previous game. But as we saw in the second and third quarter, the offense got past that turnover predilection in a hurry.
When you have a rookie quarterback, it's really tough to get anything like significant. When you have that kind of surrounding cast, the run game, all that just didn't click. And so he was checking down a lot, you know, averaging about 4 yards per pass. And that's just not going to get it done when you're trying to move the chains on this defense.
Yeah, and check downs are kind of his thing. And that's the one concern that you have about Derek Carr going forward is that he's too reliant upon those check downs. And we've seen over the course of the year, he's completed some deep shots. But he was largely unwilling to try that against the Broncos. Now, give credit, you know, a good job in coverage. They did a good job getting pressure. He didn't get the sacks to go along with it because he's so quick at getting it out of there, but certainly made him uncomfortable and took away any semblance of balance from the Raiders' offense because they couldn't run. They really couldn't do anything deep. It was just working stuff underneath, and that played right into the hands of guys like Chris Harris and T.J. Ward. You know, Chris Harris was working in the slot on nickel plays like he had in the past, and T.J. Ward, with Nate Irving injured out with a sprained MCL, Ward was working as a linebacker in nickel, and you could call it dime alignments in terms of the exact players who were out there, but really it was a nickel because Ward was working as a linebacker in essence. And the combination of the two of them really made things uncomfortable for Derek Carr underneath, which is where, you know, he likes to go, which is his safety valve. He didn't have it. He completed a lot of passes, but they were, you know, dinks and dunks, and Ward and Harris and Brandon Marshall and others did a great job of making sure there was virtually no yardage after the catch more often than not. And really, you know, that's something the Broncos can apply going forward, you know, against the type of quarterbacks they're going to see the next few weeks.
When I talked to Chris Harris after the game, and he noted that exactly what you just said, Carr didn't even like look down the field, at least until like the final drive. Pretty much everything was real short, and that wasn't exactly what he said he expected from Carr. He expected a little bit, you know, to test the defense a little bit early on, and frankly, they just didn't do that. And against the Broncos, who were going to put up points, I think you kind of have to try and throw deep early and see what you can do.
You have to take chances. I mean, I understand maybe why the Raiders are going to be cautious with Carr and ask him to take the safe option. But, you know, you're going to have to take the bubble wrap off him at some point. And, you know, you don't want him to develop bad habits and become too much of a captain check down type. You want him to be aggressive. And he's thrown some deep balls, you know, throughout the year. So I think, you know, a game like that maybe showed the Raiders that perhaps against opponents like the Broncos, they have to learn to take the bubble wrap off of David Carr and stretch him out and see what he can really do down the field, because what they did simply didn't work. Because, you know, Oakland got takeaways, got some breaks early, did not do anywhere near enough with them. And, you know, as the three and outs, you know, continued and mounted, it just gave the Broncos or it bought the Broncos more time. And then they pounced when they had the opportunity late in the second quarter.
Looking at the Broncos on their offensive line, it's been switching up a little bit of late. What did you make of what we saw on Sunday?
It's the short-term answer. I think certainly getting Will Montgomery out there at center and then shuffling around that at least gets your five best offensive linemen on the field. I think, you know, after Chris Clark struggled at right tackle and then lost that job in October, and then they tried Paul Kornick for three games, I think you emerged from the Kornick, I guess you could almost call it an experiment, you know, just trying to see what he could do. But you emerged knowing that, hey, we've got a starting caliber offensive lineman and he's on our bench now. And because Montgomery is starting now, that means you have no veteran backup for the interior three slots. You've got Ben Garland, first year on the 53-man roster, who just took up offensive line last year. And then you got Michael Schofield, a rookie who has yet to be active for a game this year. So that lack of experience probably is what helped drive the Broncos' interest this week in Richie Incognito and bringing him in and taking a look at him. As John Fox said Wednesday, it was a productive visit, but did not result in a signing. And I think they're going to wait and see. And I think also see how a guy like Ben Garland continues to develop. And, you know, he said he had five snaps late in the Oakland game. And they maybe try to learn if they're comfortable with him as their primary backup option in the interior.
Now, real quick, let's talk about Incognito, because I wasn't sure if this is going to come up now or later. What do you think? Is he a fit? What is his talent still at that high level? You know, everyone talks about the locker room issues, too. There's a lot of facets to this.
Locker room issues, and there's a history of incidents going beyond the locker room as well. I mean, has he mended his ways? What has he done in the last year to kind of fight, frankly, some of the demons that I think that he's been dealing with? It's not really a question of whether he can play, although in 2013 he showed some signs of aging as an NFL player. And, you know, sometimes that happens to a guy in his ninth year in the league. But as recently as 2012, he was a Pro Bowler. So, you know, you can kind of look and say, okay, there is some really good tape on him in the recent past. I don't think the Broncos would be exploring this if they did not have the strong locker room that they have. You know, guys like Peyton Manning, DeMarcus Ware, more and more Terrence Knighton as well. These are strong leaders who are going to nip any issue in the bud. And like Knighton said on Wednesday in the locker room, if they do sign Incognito, it's going to be incumbent upon him to fit in the Broncos culture and not him, you know, instill like whatever he's done and what he feels is right in his culture on the Broncos. He's going to have to adapt. Now, how much Incognito has grown and mended and learned from the instance in his past, particularly in Miami with the Jonathan Martin incident last year, we'll see. And whether he's a Bronco, I mean, that's to be determined. Sounds like the door is open maybe at some point, but at the same time, you know, I think you want to see what you've got from the guys you have on hand. And don't forget, you still have a lot of positional flexibility. So if one of the starting five gets hurt right now, then you can shuffle guys around, and maybe then you are putting Chris Clark or Paul Kornick back in there as a result of the dominoes falling.
Going back to the game, thanks for discussing that. I did want to go over it at some point today. But going back to the game, as the Broncos forced Oakland into those mistakes more and more throughout the game, it became a blowout. And before this game, you were talking about that this was the game they were going to rehang their hats on and get back to Broncos football. Was this exactly what you thought it would be?
Pretty close to it. I mean, at the first quarter and a half, really, you'd like to have back. But, 35 points in about a 17-minute span, can't argue with that. The explosive potential of the offense remains second to none in the league. So you're pretty happy with the final result. You'd like to see a faster start, and guys have touched on that a bit this week. So I think it'll be interesting to watch them in St. Louis on Sunday and see if they can get off to that quick start and avoid those early mistakes that bog down the offense.
Now, this game was a game they had to win. Against a team like Oakland, they couldn't afford to drop, which would have been a pretty bad loss. You couldn't afford to lose that game with the Chiefs right there behind you. The Chiefs are only a game back. And with that, let's go to our AFC West rundown.
So this week in the AFC West rundown, it's we got a bit of a short segment here, with the Raiders playing the Broncos on a divisional game that takes up two, and then the Chargers have the week off for their bye week. All we have to worry about is the Chiefs. They got their fourth straight win, 17-13 in Buffalo, and on a comeback, 14 points in the fourth. They've really showed themselves to be probably the number two team in the AFC West. They're only a game back from Denver. So I think things are going pretty well for them right now. Our correspondent, Lauren Judici, is here with us to talk about that game since the Raiders has already been discussed. Was it kind of surprising to see the Chiefs get that comeback win? With a quarterback like Alex Smith, they try and jump out early and establish the running game. So playing from behind, they've got to, look to the air a lot more. Were you a bit surprised to see them do that?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't pretty, but, they pulled out the win. And, Alex Smith didn't necessarily have his best game. And, the run game definitely took a while to get going. But, they pulled it out. And, that's really a sign of a great team. Don't have your best day, but still pull out the win, especially on the road in Buffalo. And, that fourth quarter comeback, amazingly, they were down 13-3 heading into the fourth quarter. But they ended up winning 17-13 thanks to a huge 39-yard run on fourth down from Jamal Charles. And then Alex Smith then had an 8-yard touchdown run of his own with less than 9 minutes left in the game. And the defense definitely made some key stops, and they were able to hold the Bills scoreless in the fourth. And, that first half, though, the Chiefs did not look good, and especially in the first quarter. In that first half, the Chiefs were just 2 of 7 on third down and only had 134 net yards. And the Bills' defensive line really, really put a lot of pressure on Alex Smith, and Jamal Charles could barely make an impact early on. But he did, his longest run was 17 yards, and that was, that was really it for him in that first half. And, Alex Smith had a rough start, first 30 minutes as well, just finishing 9 of 17. And, Nile Davis has been pretty excellent so far, and, he definitely could not make an impact in this game. He only had 1 yard on 4 carries and fumbled the ball deep in his own territory and gave the Bills excellent field position. But like I said earlier, the Chiefs defense really made some key stops, and they prevented the Bills from scoring on that, especially with the great field position, and a post-sack really pushed the Bills back, and they ended up scoring a field goal on that drive, which ended up being a difference maker. And if they scored a touchdown there, it would have been more difficult for the Chiefs come back, to force that comeback. But during that first half, the Chiefs punted 4 times, fumbled once, and scored that field goal. And they actually only had 1 possession in the third quarter, and with the Bills holding the ball for nearly 13 minutes. But, the Chiefs, I don't know if I'm going to say they came to life in that fourth quarter, but they definitely had some key drives. And offensively, they, despite the slow start, and, Charles was able to kind of compile a good stat sheet with 98 yards on 15 carries, but a lot of that had to do with that 39-yard run. The Bills were super dominant up front and consistently put pressure on Alex Smith, and they actually sacked him 6 times for 29 yards. And everyone knew that Bills front was excellent, but they really put that on display on Sunday, really containing the Chiefs run game and giving Alex Smith a lot of trouble. And Dwayne Bowe had a great day with season high of 93 yards, and He actually fumbled the ball in the first quarter, but recovered it himself. And if he had held on to it, I think there was a pretty good chance he would have ran for a touchdown. And he actually made one of the key plays of the game that ended up being a difference maker. It didn't seem like a big play at the time, but on third down and 16, Smith connected with him, but just short of a first down, and it was a beautiful pass, and he did a great job of keeping his feet in. But on fourth and one, Smith pitched it to Charles, and that's when he ran it in for that touchdown. And, you know, Andy Reid rolled the dice on that one, and Smith just outran everyone and made a great play. And Alex Smith had one of his lowest completion percentages of the season and was sacked the most he's been all season. But you gotta give it to him because he pulled out the win. He didn't have very much time at all. That Bills defensive line was just excellent. You know, but the Chiefs defense held the Bills to 13 points, not bad. And Anthony Sherman recovered a fumble to set up that Alex Smith touchdown. And, you know, Kyle Orton had a pretty good day, but the defense stood up when they needed to, and they allowed 111 rushing yards, but no rushing touchdowns.
With the Chiefs on a pretty strong stretch here, winning four straight, they have shown themselves to be probably that number two team in the division. Yet, it looked like they were going to drop this one. They were down 10 points, headed into the fourth, and hadn't gotten much going. What weaknesses did they show before they pulled back into it?
The run defense has definitely been a bit of an issue for the Chiefs. You know, giving up 111 yards to the Bills was obviously not ideal. But then also, you definitely don't want to give up six sacks. You know, that offensive line definitely needs to protect Alex Smith. And, you know, even against the Bills, who have been excellent at getting to the quarterback, you can't let that happen. And because they kept putting pressure on him, you know, also they couldn't really get the run game going. You know, Jamaal Charles really couldn't make an impact until that touchdown run, which obviously was huge. But I mean, you have to protect the quarterback and you have to maintain the run.
The Broncos have already seen the Chiefs once. Week two, they pulled out a win as the Chiefs were trying to make a comeback run. As we've seen the Chiefs kind of reestablish themselves in the division, most of it has been up front. They just controlled games, controlled the tempo, controlled the time of possession. And this one was kind of the opposite. They had lost the time of possession. As you said, the third quarter was all Bills all the time, and they had to play from behind. Did getting that comeback win kind of establish them even more as a more dangerous team than we had previously thought?
Yeah, you know, I think so. I mean, I said this earlier, but I think that when teams win games, even when they don't play their best, I think that says a lot about a team. I mean, look at the Broncos against the Jets. You know, Broncos obviously didn't play their best game, but I think that they show that they're winners. And the Chiefs are riding a four-game win streak now. I mean, I think they're definitely one of the hottest teams in the NFL, and I mean, I think that they can definitely give any team a run for their money. They forged that fourth quarter comeback and showed that they are gamers and that they can come back even when things aren't necessarily going their way.
Still, for the Chiefs, you have to be happy with the way the season's gone for them after injuries to Mike DeVito and, of course, to key linebacker Derek Johnson, who is definitely one of their top players on the team. That they've been able to do so well and put themselves right into the wild card spot at this moment is definitely, I want to say, a bit surprising. I mean, when you lose one of your top players like that, to still be in the postseason race is definitely a tough thing to do. Now, without those players, as Warren mentioned, the rushing defense has been a bit of a tough spot. And next week, as they take on Seattle, who just ran for over 350 yards on the Giants, that's going to get another difficult test. As I mentioned, the Chargers were on their bye, so nothing to say about them really this week other than that they're getting healthy. Next week, they're back at the grind, taking on Oakland. That'll do it for our AFC West rundown. And so now let's get back to the Broncos, looking to this week as they go to St. Louis to take on the Rams. I touched on the Rams game a little bit earlier, but mostly because of the injury to Carson Palmer when they were playing the Cardinals. But it was a tough loss for St. Louis. You know, when you're going into a game and you have the lead into the fourth quarter, and then to give it up is going to be tough. St. Louis has not been great this year. Their passing is 26th in per game yards, 24th in per play yards. They've thrown the fifth most interceptions by percentage of passes, and they don't rank very well in third down conversions. The pass rush, I have to say, is coming along with 16 sacks in the past four games, but at 3-6, things aren't going so hot for St. Louis. They just announced starting quarterback change in the middle of the season, which is never a great sign.
Never a great sign, but this is Sean Hill was the opening day starter. Did get injured in week one, and then I think part of it they liked Austin Davis's potential. They wanted to see what he could do, but now after getting the balance of the season, they've got their answer. You talked about the interceptions, the interception rate. He's had five picks in the last three games, nine on the season. Diminishing returns for Austin Davis. Curiously, as the Rams have played better football as a team the last few weeks, Austin Davis has played worse. So you can see why they would make this move. I mean, this may kind of be a last gasp move on the season. They're sitting at 3-6, so really it's there to make anything of the potential that they have. And you can see from the last few weeks that this is a pretty good team on the whole that has gotten some deficient quarterback play. Yeah, if they're going to make anything of the season, they've got to fire off a silver bullet against a schedule that's a little less rigorous than it has been, but still is pretty demanding. Starting with Denver this week, so you know it's kind of a logical move to go to Sean Hill. You know, he was the guy that they intended to fill in for Sam Bradford. From back in the preseason, that was the plan, and you know, kind of thought that going into the regular season that Sean Hill might be good enough to keep that team together and maybe allow them to play to the potential that a lot of people thought they had. A lot of people had them tipped as a breakout team this year, and some overall struggles, you know, lately with the quarterback, but then also in some other areas of the team have kind of held the Rams back.
Have you seen situations where – well, I guess have you seen more often situations where teams putting in a new quarterback, even if this guy is a veteran – in the middle of the season and they make that spark, or do you see it more often where it's kind of just like a desperation move and it doesn't really work out?
I think you see a short-term spark and then a long-term kind of return to the norm. And if Sean Hill plays to his norm, he's about an average quarterback in modern NFL standards. You know, 41 touchdowns, 24 picks for his career. His rating's 85.3 for his career. Nothing special, but solid. He had some solid play for the Lions when he started 10 games back in 2010. He's a capable quarterback. I mean, and more often than not, Sean Hill will not lose the game for you. Whereas, you know, Austin Davis last week in Arizona, I think you can argue lost the game for the Rams, particularly in the fourth quarter. So they're looking at that, and they're looking at a game that got away. And you see the Rams throughout the season playing a lot of good teams tough. You know, they've beaten San Francisco in Santa Clara. They beat Seattle at home. They, you know, blew a lead against Dallas, blew a lead against San Francisco at home, had a frantic comeback that just fell short in Philadelphia, and then last week against Arizona, leading in the fourth quarter. So this is a team that it's had a lot of near misses. It's not hard to look at the Rams and see, oh, if for a few breaks here and there, if for better play, maybe better pass rush in the season, better quarterback play in the last few weeks, it's not hard to look at them and say they could be 6-3 and 7-2.
When you look at their defense, you know, their secondary is a little banged up. They could, if injuries don't go their way, they could be starting some rookies back there. But their front seven is pretty talented, and especially their pass rush has really come along, as I mentioned, in the past 4 weeks. What do you make of that going against the Broncos line?
Well, Robert Quinn's back to being himself, back to being one of the three or four best pass rushers in the game. I think you have to put him in that J.J. Watt, Alden Smith, Von Miller type class as, you know, this young generation of pass rushers that is truly elite. I mean, he's up to six sacks now. He's piling them up. Last few games, the Rams are getting a sack more than once every 10 pass plays. That's an outstanding rate. A big key You talked about their front seven. The guy I love watching is their first-round pick this year, Aaron Donald. Really did a lot of good things early in the season against the run, but now the last few weeks we're seeing him generate more pressure in the pass rush. He's got three sacks. He's really quick off the snap. You know, unless your team is going against him, he's a lot of fun. He's a lot of fun to watch. He looks like a guy who's a real stud in the making, and you have him on the inside and Quinn on the edge. You know, it's kind of similar to what the Broncos have in terms of having Terrence Knight and playing at an elite level on the inside, and then DeMarcus Ware and then Von Miller on the outside making plays. So, Denver's offense is prepared to face guys like this because you go back to training camp and OTAs, they dealt with that. Maybe better prepared than most teams would be, but expect Donald and Quinn to wreak some havoc, and expect this to be a much sterner test of the reshuffled offensive line than last week's game was.
Now, with St. Louis's, inconsistency at quarterback, we'll call it, have they found more stability in their running game to kind of balance that out?
Well, yeah, they found it. They found it by playing the rookie Trey Mason out of Auburn quite a bit more. You know, they started the season with Zach Stacy as the primary back, and really just kind of meh performances from him for the most part. He in the first five games of the year, he was a sub 4 yards per carry four times. Certainly not doing enough to take the pressure off the Rams' passing game, which, like we've discussed, has had some issues. Trey Mason, hasn't had a great games the last couple of weeks, but has shown a spark, shown some explosion. Had a touchdown run against Seattle last month. Is a bit faster than Zach Stacy, and I think brings an element that the Broncos are going to have to account for. A guy who can make a game-breaking play at any moment. And we've seen the Broncos have troubles with running backs like that. Go back to week five against Arizona and the big game that Andre Ellington had. And if they're not careful, they could find a Zach Stacy, or if they're not careful, they could find Trey Mason having that same kind of game on him.
Plus, he is the son of one of the members of De La Soul. Fun fact.
Yeah. I don't know if they play Me, Myself, and I every time he makes a big play, and if they don't, frankly, I'm going to be disappointed. I've got that as one of my ringtones, but I'm not using it right now.
Well, as an Auburn fan, I really liked his game watching in college. So,
except against Mizzou, because Mizzou's one of the schools I went to, and there's still cleat marks on the Tigers from the Mizzou Tigers, I should say. It was Tigers versus Tigers from what he did in the SEC championship last year. I might wake up in the night now screaming as I think about that.
And then on the other side, on the Broncos rushing game, it's kind of like a carousel, Every week someone else gets off and it's their breakout game.
Yeah, and it's kind of good timing for the Broncos with Monte Ball coming back at this moment. He looks like he's going to play Sunday. We'll see. They're still evaluating him day to day, but he had a full practice Wednesday after being limited last week. Said he felt great, coming off the groin strain. And he mentioned that the trainers had told him that this was about the time it was going to feel right. And then while he was, while he was convalescing, he lost some weight. He's down 212 pounds, which he thinks is going to make him, quicker to the hole, quicker off the snap. At times in the first four games that he played, he was getting met in the backfield. Some of that was because of issues up front that frankly have led to some changes along the offensive line over the past several weeks. But he felt like he could have been quicker. He's at 212 now. He hasn't been that light since his junior season at Wisconsin when he was 210. And we'll see how he develops. But he's already said that he feels like he's quicker. He already said he feels like he's quicker. And maybe that gets back, gets him back to some of the performances that he had last year before he bulked up in the offseason.
Plus, it'd be nice just to see him, frankly, 100% healthy. After all the issues he's had, with the appendectomy and all that, you know, getting back, being lighter, feeling like his old self. Hopefully that'll, you know, take form this week against the Rams.
Yeah, you hope so, but at the same time, don't forget C.J. Anderson's going to be in the mix as well. And, of course, he had the big game last week, 163 yards from scrimmage and the 51-yard touchdown catch and run, which, frankly, was as electric a play as I've seen from a Broncos running back since Clinton Portis in 2003. Just sensational, three missed tackles, cutting all the way across the field. And, frankly, also set up by the fact that Demaryius Thomas and Wes Welker busted their butts getting downfield. I don't think I've seen Demaryius Thomas ever run that fast as he did running downfield to block for C.J. Anderson. I talked with him a little bit about this on Wednesday, and he said, hey, you know, when you see that kind of effort, it reminds you that, hey, if you're in position to block for those guys, you're going to give that kind of extra effort because they did that for you. It's kind of cool to see C.J. take it in that way.
Hopefully we'll see a little bit more of that from, you know, everyone. That kind of, I want to say, everyone talks about the complementary football. You know, Terrence Knighton's a big fan of talking about this. And everyone just making those team efforts is what can get this team even further. Going forward, the game is at 11 a.m., early game, Mountain Time. Make sure you get your night's rest that night. I know for us, we're going to be at the stadium real early.
I mean, noon kickoffs,
Are they as bad as noon kickoffs when you're in college?
Yes. Actually, the one thing for which I am thankful is that this is not a noon kickoff in New Orleans. I think noon kickoffs in New Orleans on a Sunday were sent by Satan himself. I can recall at least a couple of road trips to New Orleans where I had maybe 2 or 3 hours sleep. St. Louis, it's going to be a little easier. And the Broncos are traveling Friday rather than Saturday. And that will help them with the adjustment. And the guy who's probably happiest about traveling on Friday is the aforementioned Monte Ball, because he's a product of Wentzville, Missouri, which is just outside of St. Louis. He still has a lot of family in the area. His immediate family moved to Madison, Wisconsin. But they're coming back for the game. It's going to be a big family reunion for them, and certainly in coming back, as he hopes to, he's hoping for a big game in front of what he expects is going to be about 40 to 45 of his nearest and dearest.
What I'm excited for is the tropical warm weather. It's supposed to be up in the 30s, maybe even touch 40, a little bit of snow.
This is why they have a dome. You know, it's... Look, having spent time in that part of the country, spent a few years there, you know, there can be some nice autumn days, but, you know, even going back to when I was a little kid watching NFL games when the Cardinals were in St. Louis, the football Cardinals, obviously, that relocated to Arizona in 1988, I remember seeing games from there toward the end of the season and thinking, gosh, the weather there is just always awful, back when the Cardinals played at the second iteration of Busch Stadium, the one that was torn down after the 2005 season. So this is why they built a stadium with a roof. Now, obviously, there's all sorts of issues with the Rams and their future and their facility and all that, but I, for one, have never seen anything wrong with the Edward Jones Dome. Okay, maybe they could stand to turn the lights on a little bit more, but, you know, having a roof and climate control, that's underrated.
I think it's just going to be nice, you know, not being in temperatures that are around zero. As a North Carolina boy, it's I'm a little out of character.
This week is not good for you, is it? I mean, it's funny. We've got, you know, you from North Carolina. Lauren, who you heard earlier on the podcast, has spent her life in Southern California and Texas. And we've got one of the interns in the PR department is also from Texas, and I've, you know, asked some of them, is this week when on Wednesday in particular, when the low temperature dropped to, I believe, minus 14 out at DIA, is this the coldest day of your life?
Yes. And yes, it has been the most rude awakening. I have never been in weather probably below like single digits or below. This is completely new to me.
And this is November. Now, this is rare. This is literally the coldest weather in November in Denver since the 19th century. Incredible. Back, I mean,
you I'm know, glad they yeah. have it just for me.
Yeah. This is your welcome to Colorado. This, you know, that reminds you that you're not in North Carolina anymore. Believe me. And hey, I lived in Florida for a few years, so I know exactly how you're feeling, but I didn't have that root of an awakening when I came up here, so I feel lucky.
Well, I hope everyone else out there stays warm this weekend. Tune into the game. And we'll end the podcast this week with some quotes from the players and coaches. Thanks for listening.
I mean, it's a team that we have to stay ready for. I mean, their O-line is fantastic. They do a great job with, like, certain runs that they do and blocking schemes that we've had trouble with in the past. So we definitely have to come with it. And also, they make big-time plays down the field. So, and mind you, this is a team that's been in games before, like the Raiders were, but they actually won some games. And their defense is fantastic. So, and it's a road game. You know, it's the NFL. You never know. Because I know one thing, that we're going to get their best.
Yeah, they do a good job of jumping out on teams at home. You know, they outscore teams, I think, by like 30, 40 points at home in the first quarter. So we'll just have to do a good job of matching their intensity at home and, you know, throwing the first punch.
I mean, we got another road test, so it's going to be a huge game versus St. Louis. They're playing good football, so it's going to definitely be a challenge.
Very athletic, good pass rushers up front. Very disruptive in the run game. I think they're second in the league as far as negative runs are, you know, basically they've forced. And they've kept a lot of teams in the second and eight plus. And as far as their pass rush goes, man, everybody knew last year they were, you know, that was a special unit. And, you know, they just didn't get going early for whatever reason. Maybe teams were getting the ball out quicker on them. And now it seems like they're hitting on all cylinders now. And that linebacker core is getting better. And, you know, in the back end, they've, you know, shoved a couple guys around, but for the most part, it's a good defense. They pose a lot of challenges for us.